Welcome to another Minivate Gang podcast. This is Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Graham Thickens.
Hello.
And Phil Wilson.
Guten Morgen.
And Tim is incognito as we speak. We've always suspected he's with the National Security Agency, and now they have a huge meeting on Washington, D.C. this week, and I bet you he's out there.
Yeah.
That's why I'm always hearing a clicking when I'm talking on Skype.
Either that or he overslept. One of the two. Yeah, I'm not really sure.
Maybe he had a power outage. We had one here in West Bloomington and for hours overnight. And I got up
really?
And I thought, I don't think I can go online. And I couldn't.
Well, you know, Comcast was out last night.
And really?
I did the search.twitter.com and tons and tons of people were complaining and whining, especially people that were in the Twin Cities.
It's that Xfinity thing. It's screwing everything up.
Well, it is. It is. And actually, that there's so much confusion there, but we can talk about that in a couple of minutes. This past week, we had some interesting things occur. The Minnesota High Tech Association made their announcement of a new president, Margaret Anderson Kelleher, the Speaker of the House and gubernatorial potential candidate at one point, and
almost park board,
and almost president. Park board, right. Well, and we had some interesting comments under that post that there's some questioning about the lack of tech experience and so forth. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
Well, I think that the comments are valid to that anybody gets a job like that, you know, that there are comments that pop up. But I think you have to also remember that the job is not just about understanding how to, you know, how to run your Android smartphone. It's also understanding, you know, being able to lead an organization, to be able to seek funding, to be able to, you know, implement that funding. So it's.
Yep, absolutely.
I think that clearly, you know, somebody that has worked in politics is savvy of that. And it's just, I think, Steve, your comment about, you know, as long as the leader doesn't lose sight of what the MHTA should be about, then everything, I think, will be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we should
interesting comments.
Go ahead, Graham.
Can I throw in my two cents?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't understand that it's largely, in my view anyway, become sort of a lobbying organization for education and jobs issues and innovation issues. And so, you know, a lot of people think by its name that it's one thing that it really isn't anymore anyway. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know if I guess I can't answer the question of, is it registered as a lobbying organization, or what do you have to do to be considered a lobbying organization? I don't know. I don't know what the requirements are in the state or at the federal level, but this is what they do. They spend a large amount of their time and effort, I think, in working with the state government to, you know, push for policies and legislation that supports jobs and education and innovation in Minnesota. You know, that they've had a legislator as the head of the organization in the past, Rick Krueger.
Right.
Did it for about 8 years, right, prior to Kate Rubin. And Kate was there for, she was there for 6 or 8 years too, I think.
I think 9 years she was there.
Oh, wow. And she was a former VP of government relations at IBM.
So, right. Well, I also have great hope that the incoming chairman, Tom Kiefer, who's a guy that obviously totally gets tech and where things are headed, especially with cloud computing and so on. He's you know, got vision for, as you and I know, Graham, because we've talked to him about it, has vision for the future. and where things are headed, especially in this state. So,
well, and he really wants to get the startup community involved in the organization again, but that's the $64 question. How are they going to do that? You know, I mean, it's one thing to talk about it, but implementing it is another.
Yep.
I mean, you know, even though if you read the about paragraph in the MHTA news releases, it says the membership is made up of companies of all sizes. Well, guess what? There aren't many startups that are members that I know, and there haven't been for a long time.
Well, and that's been the
people that are paying the membership fees to belong to that thing are paying big bucks, and they tend to be the big companies, you know?
Well, and but there is an on-ramp. I mean, there's a sliding scale based on company size and so on, but you're right. I mean, I've always asked that question about, you know, why isn't Leif Larson a member, you know, and various startups and so on. Hey, by the way, I just wanted to mention, this is the second week in a row you've used the $64 question. It's actually 64,000.
I think it was the old
game show.
I didn't think it was quite that big of a question.
Yeah, the economy, it's the economy.
I'm sorry.
64,000 anymore.
Well, I was thinking the time value.
I'm 140 characters, guys, so I clip things.
That's right.
You'll have to excuse me.
No.
But that was a headline writer.
Well, I was going to segue into money and the Minnesota Venture and Finance Conference that you live blogged yesterday.
Did you see my first tweet on it?
About how there was no Wi-Fi?
No.
Oh, yeah,
no,
you were.
Oh, no, that was about the 10th tweet. That was, me started on that. No, my first tweet was at about 5:30 a.m. I tweeted a song.
Oh, yeah, 5:43 a.m. The best thing, lives are free, but you can keep them for the... Yeah.
Money don't get everything, it's true. But what it don't get, I can't use. Now give me money.
Oh, great. Now we're going to have to pay royalties on that
gentlemen,
song.
Please welcome to the stage the golden tones of Graham Thickens.
Doing the Beatles, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
I guess so you had to be there. I thought it was funny at the time.
All right.
5:43 in the morning.
Yeah, but then only my European followers were there, I guess. So,
oh, man.
God only knows what they thought. Who this crazy guy is and what's
he's gone around the bend.
Yeah.
What's an MN conf? You know,
I mean,
that was the hashtag. And it was a challenging day yesterday. Technically, let me tell you, at the last minute, I thought, oh, my God, what if they don't have Wi-Fi? So I packed my Bluetooth keyboard and thought I may end up live blogging this thing via my iPhone. And I'd never paired my Bluetooth keyboard with my iPhone before, but it worked like a charm.
Yeah.
But the trouble is the screen, the little dinky screen and the little dinky window on Cover It Live. And the Cover It Live app wouldn't work, Steve?
Oh, it wouldn't?
No,
oh, great.
It would not work. And so I had to go to the Safari browser, look at the Cover It Live mobile site and tweet from my Bluetooth keyboard, looking at this tiny little window where you type in your... Yeah, and so, you know, the live blog is just replete with fat-fingered typos, you know, that I couldn't even see, you know. Yeah. So I was hitting send, and, you know, I went back and tried to fix some of that. But my apologies to anyone who's reading the live blog. There's still plenty of typos in there. But, hey, it was in the heat of the moment, you know, and I was trying like hell to keep up with what was going on. It wasn't easy.
Well, but, you know, one of the things that struck me was in your coverage was the excitement and enthusiasm about Alvenda. They're really on a roll. But also, you did a particular post about Cotterweb, Darren Cotter, that they're up from $4 million in revenues in 2004 to $17 million. Do you know that Darren Cotter was one of our first? He was one of my first interviews from Innovate. Like
wow,
two
I've
and
forgotten
a half years
that.
Ago.
I really don't know much about this outfit at all. But
love the story. The story is he grew up in Fairmont, Minnesota, and had his dad said you can have this used car for your 16th birthday or whatever else you want that's in that same price range. He goes, great, I want a computer, and so he got a computer and they had dial up, of course, because it was in the 90s, and when he got to Mankato and they had broadband. He said, on Friday and Saturday nights, everybody be out partying and having a good time. He said, and so no one was on the network. And so he would get on the network and use broadband and was building stuff, you know, on the LAMP stack. and Linux, Apache, and MySQL and PHP, for those that don't know. And that was the genesis of his company.
And those of you that still don't know.
It's the technology that you can get stuff to be served. Anyway, but really a fun startup story. And it's those sorts of catalytic sort of things, you know, that here's a kid that's got access to broadband. And so what does he do? He goes out and he starts up a company.
And this guy's got some serious numbers going. I mean, $17 million in revenues.
I know.
And, he's got quite a team put together and a board of directors. And I mean, gosh, I was impressed because I hadn't heard it come up. So, you know, sometimes you need to go to these events. I mean, this is the big, you know, venture related event held annually here. And
here's the question and just a gut check from you on this conference. So in today's paper in the Strib was this article about weak venture funding,
mm-hmm.
and talking about how down it is even in med tech. And what was the overall mood, kind of what was the zeitgeist going on at the conference, or well, are people optimistic?
Yeah, well, let me weigh in on that. I think in a way, if they're down in the doldrums somewhat in med tech, I think that that's good, because now, you know, it's a chance for IT and internet to shine. And, you know, sure, there's always, it's easy to be down in the dumps when things aren't going well in the VC business. And, you know, and it's trending down. I mean, the guy, the National Venture Capital Association guy that kicked off the thing, did a whole series of slides to just show how down it really is in most ways. But
nationally or just here?
Yeah, nationally. Oh, well, it continues to be, you know, I mean, to be down here, I think. I mean, it changes from quarter to quarter, and who cares? PricewaterhouseCoopers tracks that, and, you know, one quarter does not a trend make, which is my friend Jay Hare over there says all the time, you know. But no, overall, and I was asked even on Twitter, you know, what's the mood in the room? I thought it was really upbeat, you know, and I think, you know, and I was amazed at how everyone was like welcoming me back to the event, because I haven't been there for years, and it may be more years than I thought it was. But Michael Gorman was especially nice in reaching out to me and thanking me for blogging, and Dan Carr too, and others. And, you know, they're just, it's an older crowd there. You know what I mean? It's the, like I said, it's the blue suit crowd. Nothing against suits. But I did wear jeans, and I thought I was the only one there, and I did it on purpose. And then later on, Steve, it was so fun at Leaf's table, you know, because Leif Larson Workface was there, and some of my clients, and I met the guys from Arthur Ventures. And thank God one of them was wearing jeans. I said, dude, I want to meet you. We're the only two here in jeans. But, you know, I said on more than one occasion to Michael Gorman and Tom Kiefer, I had a nice chat with Tom as well, that we got to get more young blood in this thing.
Absolutely. You know?
And the young blood is the great internet and IT startups we got going in this town, in large part. There's a lot of young guys doing great med tech startups too, but you know what? Most of the guys up on stage are pretty damn senior, experienced guys that are raising, you know, $50-100 million for a lot of these med tech firms, you know.
Right.
But where the action is down at the, you know, in the early seed stage stuff that the VCs don't know what to do with. And you know, they talked about that on more than one occasion, is, you know, these kinds of startups don't take much money. So it doesn't really fit their model.
Right. Well, but, so, you know, the other standpoint is there are startups like the one that I posted about yesterday, Darren Klum, who's you know, did Hardcore Computer and now has started Cram Worldwide, which is essentially a little device that delivers TV, movies, and music in real high def. Because most people don't even know what high def really is. Is it, oh, it's 720p or 1080p? Well, okay, then there's 1080i, and then there's actually how many bits are behind every pixel. And that's, it means, you know, when it's uncompressed, your blacks are nice and black versus when you can see that they're all choppy and pixelated, you know, in black scenes, on when you're watching TV. So, you know, it's not, high def is not high def is not high def. And, he's got a really interesting model. That said, I mean, I look at this and I look at the space and I look at all the flux that's going on and everything that's happening. And I ask myself the question, why aren't VCs all over a guy like this, like a bad suit?
Well, you know, they probably will be, but it probably won't be the ones in town. You know what I mean?
Unfortunately.
And the challenge then becomes, okay, how do you raise money from out of town? Are they going to make you move, you know, which is the typical thing that happens with Silicon Valley guys. But, you know, I got to admit, I haven't had a chance to even listen to it yet. I mean, it was a blur. I worked a 15-hour day yesterday and getting up early this morning. I haven't listened to his interview, but can you recap what is, has he got a team? Has he raised any money? How is he going to market this thing? Did he talk about that at all?
He talked about all of that. We only had 30 minutes, so we couldn't get into too much depth, but that's one of the impressive things is the management team that he's pulled together, but also the board of directors that he's pulled together. He's pulled together a guy that is... Here, hang on a second. Well, first off, Matt Fairchild, who's this genius tech guy, is his CTO. He's pulled together the chief marketing officer is a guy with a lot of industry experience, Disney Broadcast Alliances, MTV, VH1, Discovery, all of these organizations. But on the board of directors is a guy that was president of CBS News. As one guy, another guy had been a VP of Broadcast Alliances at Sony, and so forth. So, I mean, he's pulled together a very, very strong team and a good board of directors.
Is his team not local then, or are they all here?
No, everybody's local. Everybody's here.
They are. Okay. Because when you mentioned former Disney and stuff like that, I started wondering. So did he say anything about having raised any funds yet or not? Or
no, he has. Yeah. He's about a third of the way toward what he needs.
Interesting.
Oh, I should mention his CMO is in Florida. Sorry.
Well, almost any startup today has virtual stuff going on, you know, with people spread about.
Yep.
Well, that's interesting. I know a little bit about Hardcore Computer, and I knew he had pulled off, but has he actually announced it, or did you get like a early at this?
We got an early look at it.
Well, that's cool.
And so he's
Minovate scoops again.
Yeah. Maybe I should have had breaking news on here. No, but he's been at Minnesota Cup, so I mean, it's not like it's not that he's not public with it.
Well, you know, it isn't like we're in the breaking news business, but it's funny how we manage to pick up on stuff early, and sometimes people even let us talk about it. You know,
that's right. Well, you know, one of the things that has kind of come up too is when you look at stuff like the finance and commerce article from Thursday on the Nerdery, which is a group that I Sierra Bravo that I really am impressed by as an organization, and that Nerdery Interactive Labs, they expanded into Chicago to basically replicate what they were doing with agencies up here, which is essentially being an outsourced interactive creation house. And so rather than have the agencies have everything in house and have to build all the expertise in all these, you know, web, mobile and interactive development arenas, they go to the Nerdery and the Nerdery builds it. And so they expanded into Chicago and they're adding 50 new jobs in 2010.
Now, how many of those are in Chicago versus Twin Cities? Did it say, or?
I'll put a link in the show notes.
I know my buddy Matt Albiniak is the one they sent down to Chicago.
He's the guy.
He's the BizDev guy.
Yep.
a year or two ago now, and I know how excited he was to go to work for them, and they moved him down there after 6 months or so, and so they've got a hot town going on down there. I mean, Chicago Tech, you know, ever since Groupon took off, they're like re-energized like mad down there.
I know. Well, and then they have Threadless.
Michael Gorman and I talked about this yesterday. It's like now they've got kind of what we call a flywheel company down there that's going to spin off all kinds of or you know, encourage all kinds of other things down there. And that's what we need here. We're still kind of waiting for that internet company that really, really takes off, you know. And I said, yeah. Michael, but what about Alvin? He said, well, you know, they got a long way to go yet. And I go, yeah, I guess to be a Groupon, they do.
No question.
Groupon's heading for $350 million in revenues and have a valuation over $1 billion now. So Chicago is hot.
It's staggering.
Yep.
Yep. Well, just to finish up on the whole money discussion, it was interesting to see that Bernanke this morning said that the Fed is prepared to act to boost the economy. And every single morning I flip on Squawk Box on CNBC and listen to the discussions. And, you know, they got everybody on there from Jack Welch to, you know, various Republican and Democratic governors and senators. And they had a guy on today, a Florida multimillionaire who's a real estate guy. And he's a Democrat. And he was talking about, you know, I mean, imagine being a Democrat in Florida. be kind of a oxymoron, but at any rate, he was talking about real estate and what was happening in the marketplace and all of that. And the one theme that came out again and again and again and again and again is the word confidence, and that that all the money is parked on the sidelines by corporations because they're not confident that they can expand and that that all the things aren't in place. And how big of an issue? I mean, Phil, when you talk to, you know, people in the mobile space, and you talk to people that are looking for new opportunities and to grow and so on, how big of an issue is confidence or the lack thereof?
Well, I think it's always brought up during the political season, but it's the main driver of any economy is consumer confidence. And I think that there's confidence. There's less confidence right now simply because of the staggering losses so many people have taken, especially in the middle class.
Yeah.
I talk to people and, you know, I think confidence has everything to do with risk aversion, and risk aversion is probably the biggest thing that any investor faces or tries to deal with. They don't want to take huge risks, but they do need to take risks. And this day and age, when risks don't pay off, it can be pretty staggering for a small startup. So,
I
wish I had the answer to all of, you know, how do you improve confidence? Because you can't really improve confidence without taking risk. That's all there is to it. You just can't.
Yeah.
And so it's just a frustrating time. That's for sure.
And I think it's business confidence. It's even a bigger issue than consumer confidence. You know, businesses just aren't hiring, you know, that we keep hearing that, you know, right. Sure, the temporary help numbers are going up and, you know, companies are hiring contractors like mad because they don't have to commit,
right.
You know, and we see a lot of that going on here in town. And there are startups that have come up that are helping companies find, you know, contract help. It's been a pretty big industry and it's becoming a bigger one, you know, so
well, and it's
business confidence. That,
so when did we start calling it contract work and stopped calling it outsourced?
Outsourcing? Well, that's another term that sort of has the connotation of offshoring though, you know,
it does.
Another name that the local guys do, the Stark Collaborative guys use, that Best Buy uses. And it's a really an interesting term. It's not temporary employees, but it's
slaves.
Oh, God, do you know what I'm talking about?
See, slaves.
They use that term.
Slaves.
Like portable employees or something.
Transient employees.
Well, I don't think they use that, but that's essentially what it is. You know, it's like, sure, they'll hire them by the ton. And, you know, I mean, all the local companies have been doing this for years and years and years, particularly in IT, you know, but it's becoming much, much more prevalent. And that's because of the lack of business confidence and you know, the temporary hiring for part-time or temporary help is way up too. So that until that changes, you know, the economy is going to be hurting.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I thought was interesting was a discussion that it depends on when I'm flipping around, but I was watching the Kudlow report. If you ever see that on CNBC,
and he
had a bunch of people on that were talking about this exact issue, and one of the pundits whose name escapes me right now was just really agitated. He said, "Look, it's a chicken and the egg. On the one hand, businesses aren't confident, so they're not hiring. On the other, consumers, who drive 70% of the economy, consumer spending, aren't confident, so they're not spending. So." Mm-hmm. How do you, which one do you do first? Do you focus on, business because that's the easy one and there are fewer of them and it's easier to, you know, get them to move in a certain direction? Or do you move at the consumer space? And one of the models that was brought up was how Steve Jobs once famously said that why he wasn't going after the enterprise is he said, because you have to convince 1,200 people to take on your stuff. And I would rather go after millions who can make their own decision.
Yeah. Oh, and man. The insights of Uncle Steve. Yeah,
I know. Well, hey, by the way, one of the other things is, you know, reading the Morgan Stanley reports, which are always fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. One of the things that was interesting was the discussion about the iPhone, the fastest ramp up of any consumer product in history. And the iPad is following in its footsteps, and it looks like it's going to be even bigger. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was interesting was Blodgett. Is it Michael?
No. Henry.
Henry Blodgett. Yeah.
He runs Business Insider. He's got a hell of a media business going now. Yep.
Well, one of the things he had done was and I'll see if I can find it for the show notes, but it was an analysis of the mobile space and essentially how money was shifting from Nokia and BlackBerry to Apple. So that it wasn't essentially net new spending, it was replacement spending, and it was a refocus of that spending to Apple and to Android-based devices.
Well, so, no shit.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. Well, I know it seems obvious.
It's not like people are printing more money. Of course it's shifting.
He had to read a 10,000-word analyst report to get it.
No shit.
No, they can be long.
I know.
But they are good. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, speaking of consumer stuff and the fact that we are, 4 weeks away, 5 weeks maybe from Black Friday, how do you guys think Best Buy's holiday season shaping up, and what are the hot products going to be?
I think it's going to be big from everything I've been seeing and reading, but yeah, it's like you say, Steve. Everything TV, you know. I mean, the Rokus and the Apple TVs, and they'll be selling those too, right? Or they are already, I suppose.
I'm not sure.
They sell a lot of other Apple stuff. I mean, it's amazing to me how their Apple section has gotten to be so prominent. But yeah, if they don't have Apple TV yet, I guess I'd be shocked if they didn't as the holidays approach.
How about a prediction from you guys? When do you think Best Buy will get out of the selling of Blu-ray discs and DVDs?
That's not one for me. I couldn't answer that. Why do you think it's just two years?
2 years?
Yep. Why would they get out? You mean make a move to stop selling it?
Well, that essentially already, if you walk into any Best Buy store, there's basically hardly any music left. Mm. And the DVD sections are still fairly large, but they're shrinking.
I see. Okay.
And now that we have access, well, I mean, for example, last night there was a problem with Comcast, and we couldn't get the box to boot up properly, and it couldn't access anything and so on. And the internet connection worked. So my wife wanted to watch a show that we'd recorded. And I said, you know what? So I opened up the Apple TV and we bought it for 99 cents and watched the show. And so we could have access to it.
That would be 99 bucks, wouldn't it?
No, not the show itself.
The show itself.
The show. Oh,
yeah, just the show.
Not buying Apple TV.
Not buying the box itself. Yeah. And the point is that we got it and we were able to watch it. The quality of it was better than the recorded HD quality over Comcast.
Yeah. So I think
I was stunned.
Well, you know, the folks at Best Buy have spent the last 2 years, 3 years, even longer, you know, that I'm aware of, at least, figuring out what to do with that space. They are, you know, trying all sorts of different initiatives because that'll be a big hole in the store when everything shifts to online and download. I mean, you know, 2 years might be a little aggressive, but because I think that it's easy for us, especially Steve, to see the technology and really take advantage of the technology. I think, you know, for the average consumer to invest in and understand the technology of getting their video that way is going to take a little longer. But yeah, Best Buy is very aware of the way the delivery of the stuff is changing. So yeah, it's just a matter of time.
Now, Graham, you were saying that this new Cisco Yumi, that Best Buy is going to be carrying that.
Yeah,
did you read that somewhere?
Yep. And I knew they were talking telepresence because I remember Robert Stevens mentioning that. But yeah, I saw it that they'd be carrying it, and you know, I question how many they're going to sell at $600. But
and $24.95 a month.
Yeah, and you need really really fast broadband. Like, is it 3.5 and above, or is it even more than that to really have that thing perform at its intended level? And there now, Cisco's claiming there's something like 30 million households that have that already, but I'm wondering,
is that,
you know,
an
how
upload
big those
speed?
Numbers really are.
Is that in his upload speed?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah. You know, I mean, here's the one thing about that is, I've personally evangelized Skype video conferencing for a couple across the street whose son, daughter, and grandkids went over to London for 2 years, and people in my family, same thing. So, you know, people could see each other without having to jump in the car and drive for an hour. It augments relationships. It doesn't replace it. But I look at all the people that I know that use, like we're using Skype now for the podcast. Would we pay $600 plus a monthly fee each to use
to get that
Yumi?
Super high definition?
Yeah, and the answer is no. Not going to happen. And we're technologists. We're in theory target market. So you
and
know,
we're
I
also
see,
realists.
We're also realists. Yeah. I see it has great application for business.
Oh and I think that's where Best Buy may be really going with it, you know, and that gets into, you know, how many people that walk through those doors to a Best Buy store are independent business people too, or small business people, and this starts to get into where does Best Buy end and Best Buy for Business begin, you know.
Right.
And, well, I think you also have to realize that they're getting in early on a technology that we know will come down in price. That's all there is to it. It will come down in price, and first one in wins. And I think Best Buy has always been very, very much on the edge of that. You know, look at the flat screen TV and the plasma screens. They're a fraction of the price they used to be, and Best Buy is a leader in selling those TVs. So I think it's maybe the Yumi is a little expensive now, but you know, come 2 years from now, it's probably not going to be very expensive.
Yep, they want to show. They want to showcase the new stuff, and they do tend to be the first that carries this stuff, and good for them, you know.
You know, we need to really get, we got a Julio on this. Let's talk about more a consumer brand, consumer electronics, and maybe look at this Christmas season with a little input from our friend Julio.
Let's do that.
He can add a lot more to this. I mean,
we can talk about all the TV stuff with him and so on. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I miss Julio. We haven't had him in a while. I, doggone it, we need him on.
Hey, Phil.
Yes.
You had driven something with on 10-10-10, Sunday the 10th.
Oh, yeah.
The Give 10 thing. And so what happened?
You know, it's fine. I was interested because I put it out there as a very low key sort of a thing. It was, you know, not only did I want to, you know, look for something that, you know, we could dovetail into this whole being enamored with 10-10-10, but, and it really was just an idea and a thought to do that. I was curious to see how it would spread. And I was surprised that it didn't spread more than it did. I give no complaints. I mean, I was very happy that people retweeted it and some people picked up the mantle, and it was great. If we got 10 more dollars to some charity, that's better than nothing. But you and I were talking about this earlier this week, Steve. It was kind of curious to see how, you know, it seemed to have everything as far as easy to forward on. There was no, you know, no controversial fundraising going on. It was, you know, your money, your choice, that sort of a thing. And again, I didn't put any marketing plan together for this, but I was just kind of curious and interested to see how it would spread on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. And it was interesting. I was very interested to see even those people that I know well in the social media community and Twitter community, even they who knew me didn't necessarily retweet it or forward it on. And Steve, you made an interesting point saying maybe it was because it wasn't specific enough.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe you know, it's one of those things where, and I know my wife and I always talk about, we have our strategic charity list, and these are ones that over time we've decided that we want to donate to. And one of them is the St. Joseph Home for Children. So if any parents are arrested or have issues or whatever, there's a safe place for kids to go on an interim basis until situation is resolved or relatives are contacted or whatever. And it's really an important charity, and it's kind of been one of our favorites for many, many years. And so we look at the charities that we donate to, and if somebody contacts us about, you know, doing something else, you know, we have a set aside amount and that's what we give. And, we'd have to take somebody off. And so that makes it tough. And I wonder if, how many people were like that say, you know, I already give to whatever, or I already do this, or I already do that. And, but to your point, then why wouldn't they maybe just do it anyway? Yeah. I don't know.
It was interesting. A bit of an eye opener for me, and you know, it really does go to prove a lot of different things from a marketing perspective. Yep. If you don't necessarily approach something with a marketing plan and you expect higher results, well, then you know you could probably be disappointed. It also kind of brought home that, you know, sometimes it's just not there's just not interest. That's all there is to it.
You
got to fight the I'm not interested, you know, thing. So.
Well, you know, I give with an automatic monthly deduction from my checking account to my main, you know, nonprofit charity type thing. And so, you know, it happens without me having to click anything, you know, it just hits my account every month. And therefore, I wasn't inclined to go out and hit that site again. And, you know, just because it was the 10th, I think they take my deduction out on the 9th or something, you know, so.
Well, that counts. For me, Graham, that counts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My spirit is there, you know.
Yeah. Well, it was just an interesting result. So I just thought maybe that's something that should be talked about more on a marketing level. But I find it interesting. But I was happy to see a lot of people pick up the mantle. The Humane Society benefited from it, from some folks. And, you know, I was happy to see some people pick it up. So.
Well, now, if you only had the reach of Stephen Colbert.
Yeah, exactly.
You could motivate the Phil Wilson Nation. and get people going.
We're a very small, tiny island nation.
So our pal Rob Weber up at W3I, he just did a great comment and actually asked a couple of questions. And the first one really struck me because I was thinking about it in the context of all the stuff that's going on with the TV space. You know, Google has CNBC and a couple of others, and Apple has just ABC and, you know, and so on, that there's this huge flux going on. And at the end of the day, consumers are just confused as hell. They don't know which one to buy yet. And so he asked the question, he said, well, all the discussion of different juggernauts creating app stores for Android, do we see this as a positive or a negative trend?
I don't think it's either. I think it's just a trend. I think it's, you know, the proliferation of apps has always been a problem. Just ask Apple. How many apps in the App Store now?
I don't know, a quarter of a million.
A gazillion or something like
over
that?
Over a quarter million.
How are you possibly going to weed through all that stuff?
I mean, when I start Saturday morning early.
When I have an app that I look for on the app market for my Android, you know, I'll put it in, you know, a word and search, and I'll get pages of apps.
Yeah.
I'll never get to the bottom one because I just don't have that time. Yes, will it make it difficult to discover apps? Yep, sure it will. But again, it comes to the whole thing that drives a lot of social media is that news finds you, things find you. If it's important to you, it will find you. And if an app is useful and it delivers on a service that's important to enough people, yeah, it'll be successful. If it's just another fart app, no, it's not going to be successful.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Graham? When you talk about finding you, that gets into Web 3.0 and you know, discovery engines, and Rob's brother Aaron with his new startup Inveni is right smack in the middle of that space, you know, and how, you know, social recommendation service, which is basically it's a semantic web kind of a discovery engine, and that's gonna be big for apps, as it is already for music or for movies and TV shows, and I think for music is coming. Talked to a great music startup yesterday. Doesn't have anything to do with music discovery necessarily, but that was another topic I got into yesterday at the collaborative event. But getting back to discover, you know, with apps in particular, you're going to have to rely on people to recommend things to you or sites that, you know, there are already tons of review sites and so forth. That's a growing sector is, you know, sites that can help you figure out apps, you know, app review sites, you know, have proliferated, but it's the Web 3.0 semantic web piece, I think, that's going to make life a lot easier going forward.
Well, yeah, I think it's all a matter of, you know, I think the last two apps that I downloaded to my Android were results of discussions that we had. I mean, I think Tim was talking about Dropbox, and I thought, hey, yeah, I should have an app for Dropbox on my Android phone. So I wouldn't even thought about going after it unless I, you know, ultimately found myself needing to access Dropbox from my phone. But it was like, yeah, I should probably have something like that on the phone. And so it's, I think it really comes down to, you know, what are people talking about? What's important to you at this point in time.
So. And trusting your friends, you know,
and
you're
trusting
your
friends.
And that's what this whole recommendation thing is. That's what makes it so fascinating.
Well,
and by
the way,
Inveni was another one of the startups that were in the showcase yesterday at.
Oh, they were. Okay.
Collaborative. Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. There were, you know, there was a lot of cool stuff there. I mean, it was, you know, when you ask, you know, what was the mood? It was high energy because, you know, there were so many interesting startups, a lot of which I didn't even know about, you know.
One of the things I think about with this whole space is, you know, in theory, if you are, a research scientist, that your friends are going to be research scientists. So you're going to trust their recommendations more so than you would if you went to dig.com. You know, and there's, you know, some 23-year-old kid who, you know, works as a there's an auto mechanic who's talking about some great app, you know.
Dig is screwed, isn't it?
Well, in many ways.
I think it had its day.
Yeah. But I think about the curation model.
Yep.
So, you know, a guy like me, I've looked at RSS readers on the iPhone, iPad, and I bought four of them. I've used some free ones. I've used web-based ones and have settled on one that has really changed the paradigm of how I read RSS feeds. And so somebody else might be interested in, okay, so what else did you look at? What'd you go through and why'd you settle on this one? Mm. If I had the time, effort, and energy to put into that, I could do that. But
which app is it?
It's called Feedler, F-E-E-D, L-L-E-R.
Okay.
So, anyway, I think about that with the confusion, but I think at the end of the day that it's going to be an Inveni-like, product that basically says, well, I don't care how many app stores there are. Let's curate all of them. And so if somebody's looking for a specific kind of app, then it'll be there. And I think that'll make it easier for app developers, for example, to get their apps discovered.
Yeah.
But listen, we should probably rock and roll here and just briefly touch on some upcoming events. What do you think?
Yep. Sounds good.
Magnet 360 executive briefing is...
When is that again?
That is... I knew you were going to ask that.
Is it coming up this next
October
week?
October 26th.
Right? Yeah, and, that's next. Yep. Whatever.
Yep. And it's free. And it really has some really great, I mean, Wade Gerton from Alvenda and Joseph Reuter from Curation Station, Matt Meets from Reside, who, by the way, they're doing a ton with Salesforce in really pushing the envelope on it. And so I'm really looking forward to that one. MHTA's Techni Awards.
That's November, right?
That is coming up on November 3rd, 2010, mm-hmm. down at the Minneapolis Convention Center. And then I also wrote about this, the U of M's Digital Technology Center.
Yep.
They have something coming up on the 19th of October. Sorry to jump around here, but called What Went Wrong, How the Internet Stagnated, or the 30 Years War of the Bellheads and the Bitheads.
Oh, my God. This is really geeky.
It's really geeky.
Yeah. You can tell by the length of the time.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's academia. Yeah. But the point is the guy leading it has been an R&D of computer networks since 1970. And what I really enjoy about some of these sessions, because 90% of them are over my head, but this one, and I just love this one question that he asks, given what we know, if the internet were an operating system, would it have more in common with DOS or Unix?
I lay awake at night worrying about that.
But you know what? I mean, if you are in the internet space and you're architecting systems and all that kind of stuff, so for anybody in the development community that listens to this, this is something that you'd care about. But again, a lot of this stuff is really pushing the envelope on geekiness. Yeah. I dragged Doug Olson to one of these when he and I were at Lawson. Doug is running the Microsoft Design Tools group with a huge office here. And it was one on the mobile space and digital technology. And he and I sat in the back. And it was one of those things where when I looked at him and he kind of said, yeah, a lot of this is over my head. I thought, okay, maybe we should go at the break.
Yeah,
it was a little bit too
deep.
Go
watch cartoons or something.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's coming up.
Also, social media breakfast, the 30th edition of SMB happens on the 29th.
Uh-huh.
Social media meets travel and tourism. And I'm actually going to be moderating that panel. So I'm looking forward to that.
Where are they doing that one, Phil?
This is happening at the Carlson Companies, I believe.
Oh, that would be a good place to have
the
it.
Corporate office.
Considering topic.
Yep, the Carlson Companies Rotunda on the 29th, 8 to 10. Of course, that means I got a hell of a drive ahead of me, but that's okay.
Who's on the panel? Have they named all the panel members?
No, they're still fleshing it out. Beth Blair, who works with the vacationgals.com and the spagals.com, writing various blogs. And then also Adam Johnson from Visit St. Paul. And then we'll kind of keep fleshing that out as we get closer to the event. So check it out.
Great. Yeah. Are you? Please don't be mean this time.
Mean. I'm never mean. When was I mean?
You're demeaning and you're mean to the panel members. And no, I'm kidding.
Well, it's only when you're on the panel.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, gentlemen, as always,
thanks very much.
This has been awesome.
Have a great week, and we'll see you next week on the Minivate Pet podcast.
All righty.
Okay.
Take care.
Off to Friday.
See ya.
Bye-bye. See ya. Ha 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 ha!